Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. You can get more information about the news and links we talk about on geekson.com.
All right, welcome, geeks.
Hello.
Hi.
We missed
Hello.
You.
How you doing?
My name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a filmmaker and graphic designer here in Los Angeles.
And he is a geek.
And I am a geek.
My name is Peter Robinson, and I am a writer here in Los Angeles.
And he is a geek.
And I am a geek.
I am Matt King, and I am an actor geek here in Los Angeles.
I am Donald Marshall. I am a writer and video game professional here in Hollywood. And I'm not a geek.
What?
Okay,
yeah,
I'm a geek.
Right.
I'm a geek.
How was your geek week?
How was your geek week? I like that.
I saw Battlestar Galactica last night.
Oh. Oh.
That's right, over at
Peter's. Was it good for you?
It was a good episode, you know. There was no, like, you know, crazy moral dilemma here. It was a good, it was an action episode.
Do you like how the space battle scenes are shot?
Yeah, those are cool.
Okay.
The Cylon ships still suck.
Oh, really? Okay.
I mean, they seriously suck.
I love the movement of the ships, though.
No, that's cool. Yeah, I was telling Maureen, they move like spaceships, not like airplanes. Like, you know, the old series, they all moved around like jets.
Yeah.
Like fighter jets. Here, they move.
They have to coast.
They have thrusters. That they can, you know, that was very cool.
We had an interesting moment last night. We were watching...
Wait, you and Aaron had an interesting moment last
night? We had a very interesting moment last night. No, I saw the...
my lonely, I hunger for your touch.
Okay. Yes. In fact, that's exactly what happened. Aaron and I had a little, you know, we were making some pottery, you know,
nice.
A la Ghost, and no.
Is it getting warm in here?
We saw the trailer to Star Wars, the new one.
Oh, excellent. No.
I didn't see that.
Well,
that wasn't a moment that I was there
for. No, the we I'm talking about doesn't include you.
Oh, okay.
It includes some friends of mine.
Okay.
And one of the things we saw that we noticed was in the trailer they're intercutting some of the old footage from the old Star Wars, you know, from the original first three.
Really?
And they show Alec Guinness, they show Luke Skywalker.
Oh, right.
When you saw these bits, when you saw the stuff that was from the original one, you were just like, oh. And when you saw the new stuff, it all looks so fake.
Yeah.
That you just like, you know, you know, there's this energy and simplicity and wonderfulness to the original.
Yeah.
And the new stuff, you're just like, whatever.
Yeah, it's a green screen.
And then... Well,
I think when you lose models, you lose that quality, you know?
Oh, this is an argument for a future day.
I have to argue about that. But well, I think that should be another geek topic. Models versus CG.
Must interject.
Well, this
Yoda
is a
Muppet and should be played by one. Okay.
Just because of the Battlestar Galactica stuff, I was noticing that the Battlestar Galactica stuff looks so much better than all the stuff in Star Wars. And this is for a TV show, and it's because all the stuff has this real sense to it. It all looks battered and old and crappy and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Whereas all the stuff on Star Wars...
Now become shiny and new. It's like they retrofitted to shiny and new.
Well, I think that was a design choice, which may have been wrong, but they said, okay, Star Wars, all the ships were rusted. Here, they're all going to be shiny and new. I think that was a design choice. And you look at it and go, I don't know, it looks kind of plasticky and shiny. It's like, it looks like CG. Well, they could have made them
look like CG.
Well, I agree, but I think it's just because they haven't been great looking special effects. Mm. Okay, anyway.
Anywho.
Let's skip to some geek news.
Geek news. I like it.
Geek news. Coming to you live from LA.
Okay, so I have this memo here about the president's service rec. Oh, wait, no, excuse me. Let me move on to the next one. Let's see.
That's twice.
I'll be Jeff Gannon today. Let's see. Well, I have a news story here saying that the Israeli army has officially declared that it frowns on Dungeons and Dragons players and does not consider them to have strong enough moral character, strong enough willpower, and a clear enough connection to reality to hold higher than basic level security clearance.
Well, duh.
What was that X-Files line? The guy who said,
"Come on, baby, need a brand new sword of sharpness?" Or
no, he said, "Like,
well, I said that last.
You
week.
Don't play. You don't play 20 years of Dungeons and Dragons without learning the meaning of courage."
Wow,
that was funny.
Is it like one of those chick tracks? Do you know what I'm talking about? There are those weird religious...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, there was...
They're religious cartoons.
Susie, having become an 8th-level cleric, was now allowed to become a high priestess in her satanic coven.
Yeah, it was so... I've got to find something on Chick Track so I can bring it in here, because people have got to see Chick Track.
No, that's a direct quote from a Chick Track.
No, it's not.
Yes, direct quote.
Plus 5 yarmulke of missile protection.
How bad are the Israeli geeks? Well, that they're just giving D&D this bad.
We're going to throw up the story on our website. You need to see some of the comments coming back about it. Some people have some interesting points. Everyone who plays Dungeons and Dragons is, of course, up in arms, because all of them, you know, all of us, are basically, yes, I'm a closet geek sometimes, I admit that. All of them are saying, well, of course not. I mean, it establishes, you know, character. It's an outlet for creativity. It's a way to cope with, you know, standard problems in everyday life.
It's a way to hide from reality.
Well, that's the other question, though. I mean, it's such a... You know, pervasive stereotype.
Exactly.
Well, where does that stereotype come from?
I've known people who play Dungeons and Dragons that I would not give security clearance to, but to peg the lot of you know, people who play this game as being, let me read this quote.
It's sort of an overweening, you know.
Yeah. The security official says that they do they ask questions and they for a test, and they ask the question whether they play the game or not. If the soldier answers in the affirmative, he is sent to a professional for evaluation.
Oh, that's right.
Usually a psychologist. So if you say you played the game, they send you to a shrink right off the bat.
Well, you're crazy, obviously. So
exactly.
Is going to be the Israeli version of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah. Say versus psychotherapy.
Okay, but that reminds me, you guys, this morning on Dork Tower... They have a comic about this, and the ending is what you just said. It's the don't ask, don't smell.
You know what we also need to do? We need the link to that parody, the one that you sent me, Matt, about the cops arresting the Dungeons
and Dragons. Oh, the Reno 911.
Oh, right.
So Reno 911 has been. They've done a couple sketches about that.
We're gonna link on our website.
You see, that's why I don't let you make up Nubian characters.
Okay. I've got a new story. The Game Developers Conference is going on right now. Actually, it probably ended now. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of information about video games and all the developer nerds and geeks all piled in. It's a big convention for them. But a lot of Xbox 2 information has kind of come out now.
Ooh, fancy.
They need to start letting the developers know what's going on. Well, they've been leaking stuff kind of to them anyway.
Deliberately?
Well, yeah, they have to know what to program for. Otherwise, there's not going to be any titles to come out for Xbox 2.
Right.
But they have been super specific on certain things.
Right.
So here's some things that's come out. The CPU, 3.0 gigahertz PowerPC chips.
Wow.
Almost.
That's like a terabyte of processing power.
Yeah.
My goodness.
That's a lot.
3.0 gigahertz processing power?
Yes. 1.29.
That's more powerful than my computer.
That's less powerful than my computer.
You have three chips.
3.2 gigahertz.
Three of them.
Oh, three of them.
Yeah, three of those chips in there.
And then he went quiet.
I'm feeding sheepish.
The has an optical drive, but it's just a regular... they're not going to use Blu-ray or the HD DVD. They're probably just going to do a regular DVD.
Wow.
Hmm. Which, you know, there's not going to be movies out for another 3 or 4 years anyway.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Removable hard drive.
I do not approve.
Camera. USB camera.
Oh no.
So I can't play in my underwear anymore.
Whole realms of dumbass.
But the other thing is that that what they really were pushing, by the way, Microsoft has the Microsoft keynote speech that they did. It's on their website, MP3, and you can listen to the whole keynote speech.
Is it Bill Gates?
No, okay. No.
Bill Gates has the most annoying voice in the entire world.
No.
I know he could buy me, but still.
We'll link to that. So, you know, it's like an hour. It's an hour long.
In fact, Bill Gates, if you're listening, we're actually offering ourselves to be bought. So, you know.
But you have to buy me by the pound.
But what's interesting is they didn't just push the hardware. What they were doing, and I think this is a great idea, they're pushing the package. They say, here's our hardware, which is going to be great. But we also have these, what have been floating around, the XNA development tools that they're trying to put out. What they're trying to do
what
is...
What are they called?
The XNA. It's like a DNA.
Oh, XNA.
XNA. Mm. But what the idea is that they're going to come up with a package of tools that all work together. So instead of just throwing this brick of a machine at you and go, have fun, like they did with the last PlayStation.
Right.
And everyone freaked out. They said, hey... We want, you know, it's not just a big giant CPU that's going to get great games. It's you being able to, you know.
Is this also going to lock people into their system?
No. Microsoft has a tendency to write your own code and everything, but if you want to use their tools and if you want to use the standard so that all the audio files fit within a standard so that you can, you know, buy somebody else's audio. It's like, why develop something for Photoshop every time when you can go buy Photoshop?
Right.
Why develop your own tools? Why develop a physics engine each time when you can maybe use the Havok engine?
That was supposed to be the big advantage of the Xbox for developers over the PS2 anyway.
True.
It was supposed to function off of Windows, right?
Well, true, except for there still wasn't a standard in some of those development software tools. Like, there would be, like, a whole bunch of different, you know, ways of importing and exporting. So, anyway, but they were talking about the services. They say, hey, you know what? We're going to have live again. We're going to have set up tools.
I hope they don't improve, quote-unquote, live, because, you know...
I hope they, quote, prove live by a zillionfold.
No, the thing is, because there are certain aspects of live that I really like, and I hope they don't screw them up.
Well, you know. Me too. But they have, you know, they're making sure that every game has a live presence.
Okay.
Even if it's just... live aware. They're, you know, they're...
So you can download new levels and stuff like that.
New levels, micro purchases. So if you just want to download something very small, you can do it.
Right.
They're music downloads. They're even talking about making kind of like a music store download, like an Apple iTunes. So you could, anyway, they're saying it's just going to be... Not only is it just this rock of, you know, a big brick of a machine, it's going to come with services. It's going to come with development tools to make it easier. I think it's a great idea. I think, you know, PlayStation and Sony needs to, you know, look at this and see that, you know... It's not just all brute hardware.
Otherwise, it's going to be just like them busting down on Nintendo all those years ago.
Right. Exactly. All right. That's my big one.
Peter? I have from Slashdot.org. AOL has posted new terms of service, and they basically say that AOL has the right to use anything and everything that you send through AIM the way that in any way that they see fit without informing you.
Whoa. What?
I have a question.
Wait, what?
Okay, let me reread that.
Okay, yeah.
We're going to start over again.
Okay.
Again.
No. AOL has posted new terms of service for AOL Instant Messenger.
Right.
That includes the rights for AOL to use anything and everything you send through AOL Instant Messenger in any way that they see fit without informing you.
Wait, wouldn't that be like Mead saying that anything you write down on their paper is their property to use?
Actually, yes. A better analogy would be to say... It's like the phone company saying that anything you say over the phone company lines, they can use.
Oh.
Or it's like the post office.
That's busted, man.
Institutional aim tapping.
It's like the post office saying anything that you send through the mail, they can open up and have and use.
Ladies and gentlemen, Big Brother has a name.
Now,
it's AOL.
Now, let's be realistic.
No, wait a second. Whoa. With the phone company, right, the FBI would have to come and get a warrant, and they'd have to get specific rights, wouldn't they, to get access? I mean, they record certain phone calls. They do have access to those logs, which I understand fine.
Right.
But nobody's in there going, guy, he wears pink underwear. You know, I mean, now we have to...
Well,
I mean,
they probably
everything.
Are doing that, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they just don't
well,
send it to your wife.
I have another question. You know, the iChat system on the Macintosh uses AIM protocol. I wonder if that counts, too.
That's crazy.
I don't know. I mean,
And that's like blackmail.
Let's actually stop and look at this from a different perspective for a second, because I think one of the things is...
No, we won't!
Is there any possible argument we can come up with to support this?
Well, liability. Okay,
well, here's the thing. Let's be realistic. They're probably not going to do this in the way, like, you know, you had this new idea on a product, so we're going to steal it from you. What's more likely that they're going to do is they're going to track individual users for advertising and for things like that.
Oh, that sucks.
But that's even more, in a way, almost more disturbing. But, you know,
So if I talk about horses with a friend, I'm going to be getting those emails saying, will you all believe what these farm girls will do? I mean...
I get those anyway.
I've never gotten one of those.
Maybe I should stop talking about enlarging my penis. I keep getting those, too.
Yeah, I don't know. It's pretty
funny,
messed
I'm
up.
I'm Asian, I don't.
All right, Matt.
Only the white boys in the room. Interesting.
Matt,
we're going moving on to me. All right, excellent. There's just a thing I saw that it's hit the mainstream that gamers are perhaps going pro. I mean, you guys said that gamers have already gone pro.
Well, there are competitions.
No, there's totally pro. I mean,
right, but the pros go to the competitions,
that
and that's how they make their money.
Right.
You know, it's not like somebody pays them just to play video games.
Right, that's what
they're
talking
about. Well, they have sponsors
about.
And stuff.
Right, but they have sponsors to go to these tournaments and wear their products and...
This
you know,
is paid specifically to play video games.
You mean like they have...
Like an NBA, like a league of players paid to play. Paid to play. They talked about the WCG tournament, which is the World Cyber Gamers, which basically started off a few years ago in South Korea, where gaming is nuts and crazy.
Yeah.
And the first year it was $200,000 in prizes, and basically I think it was about 150,000 people. Mm-hmm. And this year it was in San Francisco, the first time it's been in a non-South Korean venue, I believe.
Right.
And it was 1 million players... And it was $1.5 million in prizes. So the money's really getting up there for individuals. So they were like, you know, the same 700 players are probably ending up in the finals for each of these Counter-Strike tournaments, these Tekken tournaments like that. Why don't we turn them into leagues and run them against
each
other?
It's like those Kenyans who keep running in the same race. Like they win every time.
The Kenyans
like
always win the Los Angeles Marathon.
So have you ever seen one of these tournament players play their game of mastery?
It's insane.
A couple friends of mine actually did meet I think he's the world champion at Soul Calibur 2. And they're still talking about playing this guy.
Geek laughing at another kid.
Whatever. Get out of the Star Trek uniform and laugh at me then. I mean, they're basically talking about how, like, you know, these are very, very good players that I respect a great deal for their skill. And they're basically talking about being airborne the entire match and, like, never actually touching the ground against this person. You know, it's some amazing stuff. I would love to see
these. At least that's what the legend is.
Well, no, I mean, I'm saying if they televised games that I like, like tournament style, I would watch.
Well, we have
the legend of the Geek Master.
Legend of the Geek Master.
You will be ready when you can snatch the joystick from my hand.
Well, the thing is, I mean, we have those videos. I've seen the ones on Aaron's computer. Not those videos, the other ones. The ones of the guys from Halo who do the amazing things.
Oh, yeah.
Like
they
could throw a grenade down, knock themselves up into the air, shoot 9 times. Yeah. And it's crazy. It's like, how much do you play this game?
All right. Speaking of games, I guess we're always talking about games. What are we talking about? Okay,
why did you skip Don?
I want to do my news, too.
No, it's all right.
Okay, Don.
I mean, I only have legal news here, but...
Okay, legal news.
All right. Some of you may have heard of the MMORPG called City of Heroes, right? Some of you may not have known that City of Heroes has been facing a lawsuit from Marvel Comics for quite a while now.
Right.
Marvel Comics accusing them of having come up with superhero powers and costumes that you can make that will look just like Marvel's. Right?
Right.
BS.
Well, actually, I mean, I've been online and I have seen people try and do it, and you'd be amazed how close they can get.
That's fine, though.
But here's the thing. I have to give you some background on here. When I was playing City of Heroes, mm-hmm. people went on and they'd make, like, Phoenix or they'd make Cyclops, right? And they'd do a great job. And then within 15 or 20 minutes, there'd be a GM going, nuh-uh, we're going to change your name and we're going to give you a new color scheme. So
they were trying to get rid of that.
Yeah. In my experience, they were doing a great job of okay. putting the kibosh on that.
Okay.
Not enough use of the word kibosh, really.
No, kibosh.
That was
a good word.
That was quite good.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
I try and work that in.
Go on.
But anyway, this lawsuit has been thrown out by a federal judge to the point where he actually called it an incredibly frivolous lawsuit. And dismissed all of these, not all of the claims, but most of the claims against them with something called a without leave to amend, meaning that Marvel right. can't try and fix their lawsuit and go back again. He's just branded it as a completely frivolous lawsuit. Do not pass go. Do not try again ever.
I think this is good because a couple of things.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there was another quote. I read a little bit about this. This is they said that the defendants had this like impassioned plea to, you know, to the judge. And this is a great idea. They said, mm-hmm. listen, we have a building software that allows you to put colors and shapes and stuff together. Mm-hmm. Is that it would be like making pencils and paper illegal because you can use those to draw Superman.
Very true.
Right.
So just because we have a program that lets you paint your shirt blue and put every letter of the alphabet, which is what you should be able to do, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and S
everybody
on there,
choose X, you know.
Then doesn't make you your software yep. illegal. That's BS. It's right. total BS.
Just another interesting point.
Has the game improved, by the way, since when it first came out?
I don't play it anymore.
Okay.
I have a new addiction, thanks to you, you bastard.
Sorry.
World of Warcraft game. I don't play it anymore, but you'll love it.
I'll be back. I'll be back online soon.
Yeah, whatever. I haven't seen the light of day in 2 months, thanks to you. But I'm level 57. Just another interesting point, though, is that the judge told Marvel another reason why he wasn't listening to them, according to this article, was that all the examples Marvel was able to bring were created by Marvel. They weren't able to bring any characters created by people.
Right. Marvel went in, created a whole bunch of characters that looked just like their people, and brought them in and said, see, you could make our stuff. And the guy said, well, yeah, but the judge said, well, yeah, but you did that.
Yeah.
Give me an example of a regular player who has done this. You know,
Johnny COH has definitely been taking serious steps to try and prevent that.
Johnny Firestorm.
All right, real quickly, this is my last one. Ghost Recon 2 on Xbox has downloadable content, Peter. There you go.
Wait, is this the game that I hate?
Yes, okay. I don't know why. It's a great game. Three maps, train yard interior, train yard forest, railway. I don't know what their deal is with trains.
Ghost Recon this is?
Ghost Recon 2.
Ghost Recon 2. It's like walk, 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 die.
Well, walk, that's because walk, you walk, shouldn't be walking.
Where people are shooting me, die.
Okay, you should try shooting first.
This is a very realistic game, and it's really easy to die, and you just have to learn how to play it. By actually playing it more than 30 minutes.
Whatever.
I can't play Halo because I get shot and die and give up and quit.
They have recovery and assassination. Two other games.
You take that, Peter? Take him out. Come on.
I don't even need to respond to that. It's just not true.
All right. Anyway, there's some weapons, couple game modes, recovery, assassination. Not sure yet if it costs anything, so go and check it out online.
Excellent.
Lovely.
Okay. I just want to bring something up very briefly, touch on it. Apple was suing some bloggers for releasing trade secrets.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Oh, right. And these are the guys that are their fans, right?
Well, they're fans, but they were, you know, somehow they were leaking out information about what Apple was going to do.
Right.
And Apple wanted them to reveal their sources. Apple won.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it's going to be very interesting. And
this is a website that was like a fan site of Apple's, and they came out with an iPod, like a whole schematic thing before.
No.
This is not what I'm talking
about. They revealed what Apple had a little trade show, Macworld, mm-hmm. and where they revealed their Mac or their Mac Mini, their new iPod Shuffle, and all that. And this website came out, and this blogger came out and guessed at all those and got them all right. And Apple said, there is no way in hell you did that without getting insider information coming from an employee who must have signed a
non-disclosure
agreement. Oh, boy. And we want that person's name.
If Dan Rather had come out with that, perhaps the wrong example. If Bill O'Reilly had come out with that,
another wrong example. But okay. Continue.
Well, let's choose an actual journalist, Connie Chung. If Connie Chung had come out with that, and Marvel and Apple had gone to her
right.
and said, "You must reveal your sources for this story," what would the decision have been then?
Well, they probably would have left him alone. They probably wouldn't have even filed.
They wouldn't have gone after.
I think the real story here is this is the first step towards making bloggers not a journalist.
Yeah.
Which means...
effectively, because you don't have that title and you're not within an umbrella company, ABC, NBC, whatever...
well, that's why that Jeff Gannon, they're coming for you.
That's why I gave you all these press hats that we're wearing, because right. as long as you're wearing the press hat with a press card, we're safe.
Freedom of speech.
That's right.
Journalistic integrity.
When we do this blog,
freedom
of
the press.
We wear the press passes. Any other news?
Yours is hiding a Star Trek insignia. I see that. I have one minor piece of news. Walter Koenig.
Koenig. That's right. Koenig.
Or better known as perhaps as Chekhov from Star Trek.
A whistle.
Will be returning to reprise his role as Chekhov in the Star Trek New Voyages net series.
Mm. I don't understand that. Is it video? They're shooting a show that's going to be...
They have been doing this since... I have it written down.
And you
right
didn't
here.
Get to see.
Wait, they've been doing.
January 17th, 2004 was the release of their first internet episode.
We're going to have to look this
and
up and put it up.
A second installment being released October 8th,
2004.
So.
You don't get. Is it.
I believe from my belief. Okay. This is my understanding of the series. It's a continuation of the first series of Star Trek.
Is it right? Video, audio, or written?
Video. Video. They really? Actually film these things.
Aaron just got really visibly excited.
I have a feeling we know what next week's episode is going to be on, gentlemen. So Walter Koenig is going to be on one of these, mm-hmm. Reprising his role. And he's the interview I read with him on this website that we will put up on our website was very enthusiastic. Very enthusiastic.
Interesting.
Excellent.
Okay. Should we move on to our discussions of the week?
Discussions of the week.
You know, I do have reverb. I can just put on the voice.
I don't have to just do reverb for
it. I can add that later.
I kind of think it's more interesting when Matt does it, though. It's fake reverb. It's like
a model versus CG.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no. Damn,
fighting words.
Okay. All right. Discussion of the week.
Discussion of the week.
Week.
Halo 1. Versus Halo 2.
All right, I'm going to be the Pollyanna on this one, I think.
All right, well, first of all...
it's a great image.
Just right on...
little right. Asian man with golden curls in a little blue dress. Take that off.
First of all, I just want to go around and ask what you think. Which one's better, Halo 1, Halo 2? Just right off the bat.
It depends on the aspects.
Oh, we'll get into that.
All right.
Can you make a decision...
Let's actually limit this. Let's not talk about it as an online game. Let's talk about it as only
a one player game.
Well, only a one or two player game. You know, story game.
So single player. So the campaign.
Campaign.
I should interject at this point. I have not played Halo 2 yet. So I'm.
And you haven't played through the story of Halo 1.
No.
Right. Not at
all. Okay. So Don will be
campaign.
Remarkably quiet
I'm the freak.
For once in his life.
Damn words.
So the campaign of Halo 1 versus Halo 2.
All right.
Okay. You know, I'd say that it's very clear. Halo 1 was significantly better. The storyline for Halo 1 was so intriguing and so interesting. Well, actually, you know, let me just stop there, and we'll let everyone have a little.
Okay.
You know,
well, I'd have to say, storyline for Halo 1 was just hands down. Now, I have to say that when I played it with Don originally, when we first got I think you got it with your Xbox.
Yeah,
didn't you?
It was the very first day we opened it up. We were like,
"Ooh, Halo!" And my friend had been talking about it. We played it, and we were both like, "This game sucks. I can't duck. What's going on?" So put it away, and then I played it with you, Aaron. We played all the way through.
Some of the monsters look like Barney, too, in the first one. I remember that.
They do. No, he's right. But the thing was
in
that,
both of them,
that once we played through it, insanity cool. And Halo 2 just sucked the big wanker.
The word of mouth I've heard, mm-hmm. this is my impression from listening to lots of people talk about both,
okay.
is they rave about the storyline for the first one,
mm-hmm.
right? And then the talk about the second one seems like the storyline's adequate up until the end,
right?
But what it sounds like to me is the same thing people do when they see a really good first movie and then go to see a sequel that's pretty good. It's just their expectations are so high. After the first one, the second one couldn't meet it. So it's not a bad thing. It just didn't live up to what I hoped it would be.
Let me actually make a quick comment on that, because I played Halo 2 first.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And then I played Halo 1. And I played Halo 2, and I was like, eh. Mm-hmm. And then I played Halo 1, and I was like,
cool game.
Oh.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. You know.
Now, well, it's good to hear.
I played Halo 1 with you, so we never played it through as a single player only. We played it through twice. Yeah, we played through twice. I mean, it's a great game.
Especially with a buddy,
it's a great game.
Well, you brought up the point of pacing.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly it.
I think the story of the first one is adequate, actually. It's
really?
Yeah, it's cool. It's a, you know, it's raid the base and flip some switches and get out. You know, it's cool.
Right.
But the pacing of the first one is great.
Mm-hmm.
You always feel like you know what you're supposed to do. There's this urgency about it.
Mm-hmm.
The little bits of the story, like, oh, you know, first this and then this and then this. Each one of those moments seems very important until the very end.
Right.
The second one, the story is adequate. Actually, they tried to get all, you know.
What the hell was going on? When we were on the Earth, I mean, the thing is, the second one, you do a brief battle on the Earth.
Are we going to be blowing plot points for our listeners and me?
No.
There will be spoilers.
Spoilers.
All right. When you're on the Earth, mm-hmm. that was cool as hell.
Right.
That was the one cool as hell moment. And then it just became sort of asinine to me. It was like meandering.
It was meandering. And I'm not sure why they felt it was important to get complex with the story when the first one was so simple and relied on pacing. And then we had the second one where, you know, we had to worry about, the Covenant's internal civil war.
It's like playing a game about Rocky. And then suddenly the sequel was all Apollo Creed. And it was like, I don't care. I want to play Rocky again.
In the first one, there's no groaners in the whole game. The game's great. There's no moment where you stop and you go, oh, God. Nah. Okay.
Well, a lot of people think the Flood was a groaner, but I like
really?
It. Yeah. I like the Flood.
I like the Flood.
Now, in the second game, okay, your very first groaner comes on your very first level when the end of the first level is, I'm taking the bomb off the ship. And all of a sudden, he's able to jump out of the ship and without any type of rocket packs maneuver the bomb to another ship and then jump back without rocket packs and make it back to the ship.
Okay. It's a little anime-ish.
It's a little anime-ish.
Yeah,
it's very anime.
But you're sitting here kind of going, okay, what? And at that moment, because I remember that was the first moment where I went, okay, I'm out, you know. But then you get to the Earth level, and the Earth level's fantastic.
The Earth level's really
And you're going, okay, now I'm really into this.
But I felt like that's what they were going for initially.
We all were hoping that Earth was in trouble, mm-hmm. and then we found out they really weren't in trouble. We had to play through a whole game where the Earth wasn't in trouble.
Was it there were spoilers and people went,
okay, that would piss me off.
Well,
that'd be worse than like playing an entire game and find out it was a dream.
Huge spoiler alert.
Wait.
Let's just stop. Anyone who's listening to a conversation about why Halo 2 is better, you know, comparing these two things, they got to know there's spoiler alerts.
Okay.
You know, well, I'm just saying if you want to skip the next probably 10 minutes because for some reason you haven't played Halo 2 in the last six months.
Like me.
I won't spoil the ending, but the ending of Halo 2 is what you thought the beginning of Halo 2
was going to be. Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't tell them.
And then it just stops.
Oh.
And it literally just stops.
It's almost like someone pulled the power cord out of the Xbox.
You guys are making a great sales pitch for the game here, folks. Yeah.
But we're not trying to.
Yeah, exactly. Run out and buy this real quick.
But, okay.
Now, multiplayer.
Now, multiplayer, though.
Now, we have to talk about the Halo parties. Because, first of all, we have geek friends who have Halo parties. Mm-hmm. And Halo parties, they were originally, what was it, four Xboxes hooked up to four giant 64-inch screen TVs. And everybody got, you know, whatever. And you'd come in, and it was awesome. Although there are four guys who are singularly the most annoying Halo players to play against in the entire world because they're ridiculously good.
It was like 4 against 12.
Right.
Oh. And we couldn't score points.
We couldn't score points. It would be insane. But that was incredibly fun. Okay. And then the multiplayer that I've moved on to in Halo 2, oh, it's just awesome.
Well, what makes it so good?
I mean, just the speed, the pacing, the levels are really cool.
In what way? They're well designed.
They're really all of the above.
Also, their ability to make you feel like you're in the room with the people you're playing with is great. You always know who's on your team. You always can see them on the map. You can always talk to them. You can always there are ways of planning. You feel like
your voice is by distance. So, actually, I can talk to you in the room, and if I go too far away, you can't hear me, unless we talk on the comm.
Right.
That's kind of a standard feature on Xbox.
But,
no, wait.
But if the enemy's in the room,
they
can hear you when you're talking voice.
Yeah.
By distance. Okay. That's good.
Yeah. And that's interesting.
They have a radio where you can talk to your team only, and their proximity. So, if you're, let's say, in a car with three of your buddies, you can talk and say, turn left, turn right, and not bug the guy who's across the map with just mindless chatter.
Right. Okay.
But if you need to scream at your entire team, you pop the button and you say, I've got the flag, you know, help me out, and everyone can bum rush you.
But at the same time, you don't want to be sitting in their base going, hey, guys, I'm in their base, and they don't know where I am, so you hurry up and get here because, you know, I'm hiding over by the blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Which you'd be surprised the amount of people absolutely do.
Yeah, I know.
I got to throw this out. All right. Now, the reason why I'm not playing Halo, right, is because I'm a PC guy. I'm a PC guy, right? So having played first-person shooters on the PC, I find it really hard to go over to the Xbox.
Well, you're a mouse user, right? So you're moving like three times
fast. Yeah, so I feel like I have complete control. You're telling me about the voice chat stuff, which sounds great. I agree with that hands down. That sounds like an awesome feature. But you're saying, okay, guys, jump in the Jeep and drive over here. Great, I'm gonna jump in that Jeep, and because it's a clumsy interface, steer straight into a wall and rebound off the cliff.
Okay, stop for a second. Is it a clumsy interface, or is it an interface you're not used to?
I would say that console games on first-person shooters are a clumsy interface compared to PC.
Mm-hmm. I'm shocked because I don't find those – I find them very versatile in terms of what you can do.
Well, I would say Halo, because Halo became the sort of industry standard.
I would throw out that Halo is so successful because it's the first console first-person shooter that has a somewhat passable interface.
Mm. Okay.
The rest of them that I've played – like I remember there was a point where you guys were raving about Brute Force.
Nobody was raving.
Nobody would ever rave.
We were playing Brute Force.
Peter was talking about it like it was the second coming.
It was cool.
And I sat down to play that thing, and I'm like, my head's pressed up against a tree. I can't seem to turn left, which is the trigger button again.
Part of that is you, because I was the same way. I used to play Team Fortress Classic and all that, and I got a controller in my hand. And I could not move my character. Yeah. And now I cannot use a mouse.
Yeah.
I play, Unreal Tournament.
Well, I remember playing, certain first-person shooters when they first came out on the PC, too. And it was like you couldn't move your character around, or you would just vomit. I mean, basically, because you're looking at the screen, everything would just distort.
And perspective.
It was like playing Robotron when that first came out.
Yep.
Oh, I just dated myself. Damn.
Well, my vote on the Halo is Halo 1 wins in the single player campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Halo 2 wins in the features category because I've spent a lot of time online with Halo 2.
Yeah. Although, God, is there something that they can come up with to just dope slap people when they're morons? I just wish there was.
Yeah, it's called a friends list.
I know, but I just like being able to just pop online, and these guys just, because there's distance, because it's like, hey, I'm never going to meet you ever again, and okay, they feel it's okay to just spout the most outrageous filth
in
the entire world, and I just wish there was
That's driving me off of Xbox Live.
It really does.
Yeah. Just come to our Sunday group meetings. We have great people to play.
Yeah, that's why
we have, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
we're playing Rainbow Six this time.
But I don't want to just play one day a week.
First person shooter on a console. Oh, good.
Come on.
No, actually, Rainbow Six is quite good. And that's from me.
Okay. I'm just not sold on the whole first-person shooters on consoles.
I actually want to go back to the storyline thing really fast. Because I want to just say one quick thing. Something about Halo 1 felt very real.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, there was something about it that
it was sci-fi. It was sort of like, oh, wow, cool sci-fi.
But real sci-fi. Not, mm-hmm. Like the mm-hmm. rules of everything were very real. Like, as you moved through it, it was
great. You talked about this. Come on, like, jumping off of something and you would get damage when you fell.
Well, yeah, I don't like that about the second one.
You know, and also, the other thing, though, is that, like, you would see people... that were on your side, that were soldiers, you know, getting shot at, and you'd run in and have to save them, and they would get killed if you didn't do it. I mean, there was a real sense that there was a real battle going on, and there were real stakes to what you're doing, and if you didn't get there and do this, that people were going to die, you know, and et cetera. I mean, there was a sense that something was happening.
Definitely.
And the second one was at its best when it felt real, okay?
Right.
That is to say... When they're on the Earth and it's being attacked,
right.
That felt really real.
Yeah, no, there's that moment when a guy comes through the wall
but,
and you're like...
You know, it felt real because that was the only time you felt the pacing and urgency of a problem.
And that there are stakes.
In the first one, you always knew that there was trouble. And then there, after you left Earth, you're like, now why am I up here?
Right.
Right. And on top of that, this whole Covenant plot line, you know, there was... Yeah,
and it was like one of the Covenant was from Brooklyn, and that just drove me crazy.
Yeah, the voiceover for the Covenant was Covenant was
on. I love that guy. He's a good actor. He was in Die Hard, but come on. You remember him? He was Agent Johnson in Die Hard, and he's like, all right, go up to the thing, and then I want to, you know, take my Covenant energy sword there and cut some people up, all right?
You know what, our big problem was when we played the Arbiter? I didn't know who to kill.
Exactly.
You've got some buddies with you who look just like the bad guys.
Yeah.
So you're bum rushing, shooting everybody. And when you're playing with another person.
And they're like,
person,
stop shooting me.
When you're playing, I'm playing with Matt and I'm sitting there like, I think I got him. And I turn around and it's Matt.
Yeah, I'm like, you're shooting me.
Yeah.
That was horrible.
Yeah. The fun part of them was the fact that you could turn invisible, that you could use this energy swords. Yeah. Those were fun.
Right. That's fun.
But but all the stuff that had to do with their plot line just was so cartoony all of a sudden.
At one point the Master Chief gets an invisibility shield. Then we all would have been like, ooh, you know, the Master Chief gets to use the energy sword for a little while. I mean, that would have been awesome.
I want to be Master Chief.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
And they... The characters...
Don?
I loved it.
Don?
Blank stares.
The great characters from the first one, you know, they're here, but they don't create any new characters.
Yeah.
You know, at least not for the human plot line. And last but not least, I have only one word to say, and that's Audrey.
Who's Audrey?
Audrey is in...
The computer?
No.
Yeah.
Stop for a second.
Oh, my God.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Audrey is the plant in Little Shop of Horrors.
Right.
And, Audrey 2.
And Audrey 2.
Yeah. Audrey 2.
And in Halo 2, the Audrey-like character.
My heart sank.
What the hell was that? Yeah. I blocked that out of my mind.
Right.
That was like Aliens 4. It was like really... Do you remember that weird...
I said, shoot, Miss Seymour.
I swear to you, if you saw that scene, you would think that you were playing the Little Shop of Horrors video game.
I'm intrigued.
It's horrible. It's horrible. I mean, how did that get past a board meeting? And went, okay, good. I approve that creature.
How did they get past copyright? I mean, it's like, you know.
I'm kind of stuck on this Little Shop of Horrors video game concept now. Like, level 4, kill the dentist.
Yes.
Right,
I'm intrigued.
That could be really great, and then the rest of it could be all.
Well,
like
you're the video game professional.
So, shall we move on to?
Move on, since it seems to be like gaming week for us geeks. The next thing I think we should talk about, because we haven't really
Are we going to talk about MMORPGs at any point in time?
That has been banned.
Oh.
Sorry,
we've got. I thought we turned this into a democracy.
Another geek. But we haven't really talked about role-playing games and board games.
Excellent.
And, you know, we're geeks.
This is true.
So I would like to, for us to talk about what our favorite RPG is. role-playing game for the non-geeks. But why are you listening to this podcast?
If you are a non-geek.
Your favorite RPG. Now,
see, but if we discuss this topic, we'll never be able to join the Israeli army.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Like, I'm not comfortable
Shucks.
With this.
all those Krav Maga classes.
I would like to, though, first say that I'm at the point in my life where I don't go through a lot of role-playing games now.
Yeah.
So
it's hard to find the time.
It is. Yeah. It is hard to find time. So
we're getting a little long in the tooth. We stick to what we're faithful to.
You know? Right. So keep that in mind when you listen to this topic that we're discussing. Is there are probably a lot of role playing games that I have never even touched that are very recent, and I may end up playing a couple of them, but part of that actually factors into my decision of my favorite role playing game. So who wants to start though?
Donnie, I think you've already let us
well,
in.
Well, yeah, so. Yeah, no, okay.
Peter, I don't think, has played as much as we have.
No, but Peter's,
and so at the
Peter's
end,
got his love. Peter's got his love.
No, that's right. I didn't realize that.
Love.
But I would
what
like...
What is it, pick on Peter? What's up with
yeah,
this?
What's going on, man?
Oh, knife right. in the back.
No, it's pick on
knife
last,
in the back. Oh.
Last time for about...
That's true. That's true. That's
Dawn
true.
For Halo, so you, you know...
No, I played a lot when I was younger.
Okay.
Haven't played recently, except for, computer games, but...
No. No computer games. This has got to be...
Do not count.
Old style.
I would like to bring up my favorite role-playing game.
Aaron's favorite role-playing game.
We're going to have to edit in some music for that.
Okay.
Reverb.
Mine
Reverb.
Is Reverb. GURPS.
And let me just stop to say that he brought in a stack of books.
That ain't a stack.
No, this is
he didn't bring them in. They live there.
Yeah.
I'll show you the stacks.
The stacks.
Later.
The
but
stacks
I did,
in other
I did
places.
Bring some just for some examples. But first of all, I'd like to say...
You're going
to
give examples?
For the radio?
Yeah. For example, I'm going to show our radio
Don,
audience.
Don's going to start quoting things from Vampire, and I'm going to start listing stats from Palladium. That's a 55% stat to start. Plus 5 per level of experience.
GURPS has just come out...
I'm a 6th level Atlantean.
GURPS has just come out with their 4th edition. Now, Matt brought up last time that one of the problems with GURPS has always been that it... they don't spend time and money on making it pretty.
Yeah.
The game started years and years and years ago, like 25 years ago.
Really?
And, yeah, I have the old
it's
original...
It's an old game.
I have the old original Man to Man, which is the board game version that they came out to kind of play test it.
I think I remember seeing it next to Traveler.
Mm.
Well, no, Traveler's really? Way older.
Okay, well, maybe I was in a very old
But there is
store.
GURPS Traveler now.
Oh.
They are now kind of continuing...
Traveler Revisited.
You know, back in the day, board games, role-playing games, all those, they didn't have...
They were almost
pages.
Interchangeable at that point.
Well, they didn't have glossy pages. They didn't have... The artwork was very minimal. I mean, if you remember the old Dungeons & Dragons...
The softcover format. And
soft
books
cover format.
Started by Palladium Books. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
They had to get them out cheap, and they still stopped to get them out cheap. They don't make much money off of them. But GURPS decided to pretty up the whole thing. All hardcover now. Glossy pages, full-color art. For those of you who need... pretty pictures.
Hell yeah.
I need the pretty.
I need the pretty.
If I'm
as well.
Paying money, I need the pretty.
Yeah.
Now, Don, didn't we talk about icing and cake last time about icing being special effects and everything else being cake?
Yes, but plain cake is pretty damn boring.
All right.
Yeah, true.
Well, here's some icing for you.
Well, GURPS has too much
no.
cake.
Okay.
Well,
no.
GURPS has here's, always been cake.
No, let me,
cake,
let me pitch
cake,
first
cake.
Because that's the misconception about GURPS. In fact, I'm going to hand Peter. Actually, I'm going to give Peter GURPS, and I'm going to give you guys GURPS, too. The reason why I like GURPS is...
I think they have penicillin for that now.
Yes.
You've got a case of GURPS.
The reason why I like GURPS is because it's simple. And you might blink and go, what
it's,
the hell?
It's too simple. I've played the game, and no. that's my problem with it. It's like, if you're dexterous, you can do anything physical. If you have intelligence, you can do anything mental.
No, that
and
is not true.
The other, it doesn't really seem that anything else matters, you know?
Nope, that's not true. They've adjusted some of that, first of all.
Okay.
I can't even argue my system like this because I know its weaknesses.
No, I'm not saying GURPS is a perfect game at all.
My problem is like, if you really want to create a character within GURPS, and there's too much sort of... Yeah. like game loopholes. Well, if I get one eye, but then I get a cybernetic thing.
I think its main strength
and,
is its main weakness.
Yeah.
It's a catch-all game system that's supposed to be able to exist in any genre you want.
Right.
Anything you can think of.
Right.
Which means they have to scale it back and simplify to the point where it can apply to anything.
No, that's not true. Okay, first of all, one of the reasons why I like GURPS is because I don't have time to learn a new gaming system if I want to play Cowboys, if I want to play GURPS Space, if I want to play Fantasy. I just don't have the time to learn a whole new system.
Right.
That's one. And I think that's a kind of an obvious one, but that could also get in the way. There's plenty of game systems that does get in the way. But the great thing about GURPS is it's scalable. You can play fast where you just roll a couple dice. Or, I mean, you cannot tell me that GURPS is not deep. I have a...
I'm saying GURPS is too deep.
No, GURPS you can play with...
Yeah, I'm saying it's... I'm the one saying it's too shallow.
Yeah, you guys are
you
saying
can wait around in it.
I've got... This is a 30-page GURPS Lite, which, by the way, they give away free. That's the whole game for you. Character creation, the whole game. The whole game can be explained in 5 pages.
Yeah.
But if you want the rule where, you know, the arrow gets stuck inside you and pulling it out does damage and you're calculating the specific, you know, this
Hack
and
master.
That. Or,
yeah.
Right. It's got every specific rule, but it's scalable. You decide which of these books, of the 150 books you want to buy, you're going to use. If you pull out all 150 and put it in front of a player, which I have done to you guys.
God help us.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you scare the living daylights out of
it. Aaron, I don't think you're interested in a game system unless it has over 5,000 pages worth of reference
Starfleet
material.
Starfleet Battles.
I mean, I have never seen a larger game than Starfleet
Battles. Starfleet Battles is insane.
Wait a minute.
Come on, those
Mr. Palladium here?
Yes.
It's a pile.
It's the same system. It's
kettle
just
pot,
they
hot kettle.
Yeah, that's true. Palladium just keeps on adding on worlds.
But we're sticking with GURPS right
okay.
now.
Okay.
Yeah.
We will have the big knockdown, drag-out brawl at the end of the segment, I promise you.
Exactly.
Another, just not an issue I have with GURPS so much as an observation, is that GURPS does one thing very well, which is just kind of take real-world stuff and present it in a situation where you can game it.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Right? That it does excellently. So you want a World War II game?
Right.
They have fantastic reference material for it,
right.
Even though I am still not a fan of the fact that if you have a high enough dexterity, you can do whatever you want. But,
right.
I don't know where you're getting from.
My problem is that it's not a problem. Again, observation.
If your reflex is high enough, then basically you have that default stat that basically, you know, you can try this. You know, even though you don't have the skill in it, you can still try it. And if your reflex is high enough, you can probably do anything.
Well, yeah, in a supers campaign.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but there are only 4 stats, right?
There are 4 stats.
And only 2 of them actually connect to attributes.
No, that's changed.
Okay, well, even
now
so.
They have skills based on strength, skills based on health, skills based on dexterity, and skills based on IQ.
See, you suck.
Oh, I'm
They've now divided
okay,
it up.
But the observation I was starting to make was, while they apply real-world stuff very well, they tend to cannibalize other people's game worlds. They don't really seem to have one of their own.
That's true.
The other thing I like about GURPS is, for me, I can't read the 12 vampire books and memorize who the prince of
But whether
Chicago
or not you
is.
Use those 12 vampire books, it creates a flavor to the world that becomes universal to the game system.
Yeah.
Whereas GURPS, it's not necessarily a negative thing, but it's too much of a blank slate for me. I have no feel of that game system.
We could go back and forth on that all day. Let's move to a different game system.
I think I think one of the things that Aaron's saying, and one of the things that's intriguing, is that GURPS creates. You know, for example, if you know how to play D&D and you know how to play Shadowrun, they're two entirely different combat systems.
Right.
They're two entire. I mean, everything that you do in these different.
Yeah, and you
have to learn how to do them. There's a certain skill set that it takes to learn how to play the different games. So if you're going to jump from one world to another type of world, you know, there's a learning curve. Whereas what he's saying with GURPS is that you can take the same type of. You can take any world you want. And you can play any world using that one system.
Exactly.
But I believe a lot of systems have a lot of role playing games have systems that set a tone for the game and match it to a degree. Right. For example, this is not my favorite game, so I'm still holding my load here. There was an excellent system that came out called Deadlands.
Yeah,
Deadlands. That was a Western kind of Call of Cthulhu demonic theme, yeah. Right?
They have a GURPS cool. Deadlands.
Well, exactly. GURPS goes out and cannibalizes these other worlds. Right? That's sure. What I'm saying. But the Deadlands system, while not the perfect system, was ingenious in the fact that it incorporated poker playing into its system.
Right.
You wanted to do something, you had to draw cards.
Yeah.
And the better you were at it, the more cards you could draw, and the better poker hand you could make from it, the more successful you were.
Yeah, so it created aspect of the game.
It's fun. I mean, right. The system becomes an intrinsic, fun part of the world you're playing.
Right.
You know? It becomes specific. No, and that is ingenious.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't say that, but, you know, and
GURPS,
I wouldn't say...
to me, I mean, so not meaning to insult your game system
is
of
generic.
Choice.
I mean,
to
it
me,
is
the McDonald's of role-playing.
Yeah, it's the generic, universal role-playing kind of
It's the Walmart of role-playing.
It is.
Dare you?
It's the lowest common denominator.
How dare you? That is absurd.
It is absurdly true. But
I guess the one, you know, it's true. I like creating my own gaming worlds,
and I love that.
And and to me, the greatest thing about GURPS is it gives you the tools to create worlds.
Yeah, absolutely.
It does not give you the world.
But every system does.
No.
Every system
does. It does not.
With a little ingenuity, you could... Like, look at the D20 system.
Yeah.
The D20 system is doing the same thing right now. It's incorporating every single gaming genre you can imagine.
Yeah.
Are you saying that Vampire gives you the gaming tools to create other worlds for
absolutely,
you?
Absolutely, because the system is incredibly simple.
Actually, I'd like to comment on Vampire, because Vampire is a game which I don't particularly like the world, but the system that they do have is quite good. Yeah, it's quite good.
Okay,
it gets a little bit
confusing. I'm done with GURPS.
GURPS, done.
Okay,
move on.
I don't have a lot of experience. You know, I played D&D a lot when I was a kid, and then I got into Shadowrun, and I liked that a lot.
So Shadowrun was your second game?
Shadowrun was the second game.
I always think
it's
like losing your virginity. Whatever your first game is kind of good, and you always hold a happy spot for that. But the second game is always the one that you're like, you're going to fall in love with.
Matt, some of our first gaming experiences were kind of painful.
Well, listen,
but let's just move on.
This is the one thing I had a problem with D&D, and that was that the character generation was so random.
Ugh,
that it was that you just rolled and those were your stats, and you know, like, okay, some dude rolled and they were really lucky and they had like all 18s. You know, and then, you know, this other dude's got like, you know, the guy that I rolled, you know, has got like, you know, a 5 in this, a 5 in that, you know, it's like, it was...
Your friend next to you just happens to roll this great character and you're stuck with this ass character for the next year.
But
there's
mastery.
Always been options to overcome that.
Yeah.
There's been game point.
There's been,
I mean, it's an optional system.
Yeah. Well, but
it's not what people think when they think D&D.
Right. What I liked about Shadowrun when I found the system was their character generation system. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, regardless of how it played, you know, when you actually played it, I could sit for hours and create characters because they had this really great system of allocation, so that every character you create is equal to another character
in some way.
You know, because you decided where you were going to put your effort.
Elves balanced dwarves in some way. Your race, whatever you put first, was you would have more money than someone.
Basically, you would have to. You had like 5 different things, and you'd pick a priority.
Yeah.
So the thing that I loved about Shadowrun is that there was this a balanced character creation system. So what you could do was you would assign assign importance to different things. Like, you could choose to have a very skilled character, and your highest priority would be skills, and then you would have more points to assign to different skills.
Right, or a very rich character, or a very, you know.
Was that the first game system to do that?
No.
Point system?
I mean, even like Champion.
That's an old game.
Champion did that.
Old.
Marvel did that.
Marvel?
Yeah.
Marvel's not old.
Yeah, the one where they had Strength 500.
Random Generation. Marvel was Random Generation.
Oh, was it really? I seem to remember.
I don't mean to hijack your thread here, but in Marvel, it was worse than D&D.
Yeah, oh, by far.
You rolled, and okay, I'm a regular human. And then the other person rolled, and they just get, okay, I'm a deity.
Right.
And then the regular human rolls, and like, okay, I can shoot webbing for typical strength. And then the deity rolled 7 times.
Right.
You know,
well,
no. Yeah, I mean, it's fun to play Batman and Robin as long as you don't have to be Robin.
Right.
You
know?
Right, right. So, but you would assign values to either magic or a character race, if you wanted to be something like an elf or, you know, or a troll, or skills or stats, if you wanted to be someone who had a lot of statistics, like be strong and be fast, or money, and your money could be used for tech. You know, like you could either be like someone who is like basically a cyborg with, you know, all sorts of different things.
My problem with Shadowrun was that basically in the end it ended up being a cop out, a copy of Cyberpunk to me. And it was like, you know, I was a huge Cyberpunk fan, so I looked at Shadowrun and I was like, eh, whatever, played it there, been there, done that.
Okay, but, you know, Cyberpunk didn't have the magic element.
Right. Shadowrun had a different flavor to it.
Yeah.
It had a very different flavor to it. I remember having a real sense of the world.
Yeah.
That.
Did that come out after Rifts or before Rifts in the Palladium system?
I have to stare at you blankly here. I didn't know about Palladium until I went to college.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, because Palladium's been around since right after D&D. So.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it.
Okay. So beyond you having a problem with it because you're a snob.
Whatever.
But
you would love the character creation of GURPS.
GURPS. Yeah,
I was actually just paging through it, and I saw some of that.
Would you like fries with that GURPS?
GURPS is by far the best character creation system.
According to Aaron.
According to me.
Okay, well,
you would freaking love it.
Well, I'll look at it, but, I mean, have you created a character in Shadowrun before?
Yeah, I've played Shadowrun several times.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
So one of the problems they had with Shadowrun, I mean, I remember...
Combat. Impossible.
Yeah, well, there was combat.
No, that game was completely played wrong. That we played that
Which
took
one?
Like 18 hours.
The Shadowrun one?
Yeah. It took 8 hours to rob the convenience store.
Oh, it was in.
It took you 18 hours to get from the cookie aisle over to
what,
the
was that
toilet
Scott?
Paper.
Was that Scott who did that?
Yeah, Scott, if you're listening.
We're sorry, Scott. That was a bad game, man.
That was a bad game.
We still love you.
Kind of.
But I do remember someone saying that they had a troll character that they had given so many different things with armor that the guy could swallow a grenade and couldn't get hurt.
Well, it was also one of those games where the whole damage system was based off of weapons.
Yeah.
So if you try to hit somebody with your fist, you would have to hit him like 1,000 times.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. To, like, do anything. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Okay. So mine, of course, I have three which sort of sit in an even position now.
In other words, he couldn't make up his mind.
Couldn't make up my mind. The original one, GURPS ain't up there, man. Stop that.
We're playing GURPS right after this. I'm going to convince him.
The first one, of course, is Palladium Games, but specifically Rifts. I really, really loved Rifts.
That is the most...
I hate that game.
First of all, there's 20 stats. That is absolutely
eight
absurd.
Stats.
No.
My problem with that game is that they came up with a game, they had a balanced base book.
Yeah.
And then they threw out game balance with the baby with the bathwater.
Yeah. The Munchkinism that's a problem with Rifts and with all the Palladium games, that Munchkinism goes out of control. And, you know,
but
it just.
The thing is,
you need to explain
no
what that means.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's definitely a Munchkin game.
Yeah. It's definitely Munchkinism is basically within any RPG, the ability to say, my character is a 40th level dwarf who has a rocket launcher and you can't actually touch me because, you know, it's basically how much can I cram on this one character.
Right.
He's absolutely
it's like my character is functionally retarded mentally and unable to speak any language, but
I can
he carries a nuke around and hits you with it really hard.
Yeah, it's not about role playing, it's about just loading up.
Exactly.
It's like,
another term for it is min-maxing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Min-maxing?
Min-maxing.
It sounds kind of like a woman's product.
You say that only
min-max.
Because you dated someone named Min.
It's true. So
Rifts, not just the Palladium system.
Rifts, very specifically, because I love the world. I love the aspects of magic and technology combined in a way where...
GURPS has
it. It's the only game I've ever seen where the same book,
GURPS
you can play a farmer
man.
Or a half-god.
Okay, guys, I got to say, what's really interesting about this whole conversation... is how connected people are to
their game.
And how much
everyone's
they
very protective
and how much they
stuff.
Hate everyone else's.
Oh yeah, it's
you know,
no,
it's
I like other role playing games. Rifts is a little hard for me because like I stare at my character sheet
and you can't tell. Yeah.
And I'm like looking at it going, what's SD mean? What's PK mean? What's RQ mean? And that's like there's 8 stats and I'm like I have
there
no
are
clue
a
I'm
lot
staring
of
at.
Yeah. So second one, Cyberpunk. you know, because it's so simple, so
easy.
Well,
you just love the world, too.
I love the world. Everything's based on 10-10 system. Everything's 10-10-10-10-10.
That's why I like the old Top Secret from TSR.
Yeah.
I love that game.
Real straight, real easy, just boom. And the third one, which we haven't played, which I will eventually convince everyone to play, is Amber. Because Amber is diceless.
I have played that.
Yeah.
It's... But I have nothing negative to say about
right.
it.
I think that's an adult RPG. I think it'd be hard for teenagers to play.
My problem with it is it depends on a certain knowledge of a literary series that not everyone does.
Exactly.
And if you haven't read that series, you're kind of lost.
And it depends on a spectacular game master. There's no dice.
Yeah.
Very true.
So it's like, you know, it's very, well, I'm going to do this.
Yeah,
well,
you do need a spectacular game master.
You have to have one. Yeah. You always feel like the game master is fair to you, but not too easy.
Right.
You know, with most games, you roll the dice and you go, well, you missed. And you can't blame the game master.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That is a system you have
sort of Solomonic game master.
You put a lot of emphasis on the game master.
And speaking of good game masters, Don.
Hello.
Yeah, you know a good game master, don't you?
This has been the fighting word show.
We're going to have a little chat after the show, Mr. Aaron. A few words are going to have to be said.
That's the title for this show, is Them's Fighting Words.
There can be only one. Like Matt.
Two geeks enter, one geek leaves.
Like Matt, I have three games I want to discuss, but unlike Matt, I did choose my game system. Like Matt, I have a literary game system that I have to give a shout out to. That would be the Call of Cthulhu series.
Okay.
Great world.
If you like the Top Secret game system, the Call of Cthulhu series basically ripped it off. It's all percentile based.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
and
an old
game. It's another good game system because it depends on the literary conventions of H.P. Lovecraft, which means the character you create will most likely not survive the story.
Right.
Or just go insane.
Yeah. And with that knowledge, I think a lot of people go into playing Call of Cthulhu with the intent of playing a character in a story.
Yeah.
Which I think a lot of other role-playing games kind of back away from.
Right.
Right. And you don't get too precious with your guy. Like, when your guy goes insane, you don't go, oh, damn. You're like, cool. You know, at the end, he's, you know, ran off. And
you can still feel good about the story,
paranoia?
Even when the entire party has just gone screaming.
Paranoia? Is that it?
A new paranoia just came out.
That's the one where you die and another clone of you pops up somewhere else and you
die.
Right.
It's a comedic game,
It's a comedy.
But it's another one that depends completely on having the fastest thinking game master.
Yeah.
I had game masters used to print out forms in triplicate because it was all about bureaucracy and stuff. So we would role play and we'd like, he goes, okay. And we'd say, all right, let's get our weapons. He goes, well, you're going to have to fill out form 1099. And he actually like would hand out the forms. We'd have to fill them out. And he would be chasing us while we're filling out forms. and then we'd hand the form in. And he goes, well, you can't hand this to me. You have to get a P-38, and then you have to go down the hall and wait in line. It was the funniest game ever. He's a great game master.
That was a great game. Just reading the books back then used to be so much fun.
Yeah.
The second game system, I feel, it must be acknowledged, it can't be passed over while discussing this sort of thing, is the new D20 system.
I know a lot of people do not like it.
You talk to me about McDonald's of gaming.
I'm not saying it's the greatest grand system.
That's
but
true.
What I'm putting forward.
Well, it's like the Burger King.
Yeah, it's you don't get to throw stones at the D20 system, Mr. GURPS. Because at least they have their own world systems as they devour every other system in existence.
Well, it's Hasbro.
It's the Walmart of gaming again. But as far as game improvement goes, the D20 system I would put out has been the best game evolution that we've seen in role-playing.
Just like it because it's adaptable to role-playing games on a computer. Because it's easy to take the numbers correlate that to numbers on a computer. So you can basically say, this is a 20-bit
game. You could do
that. It's very simple. The new system is very simple as long as you can get rid of all the old D&D crap that's accumulated in your brain.
But that's not really an evolution. They just scrapped the whole...
But they didn't. All the original stuff is still there.
Still there.
It's just been
redirected.
They just
took THACO out of it.
Yeah, THACO's gone. Now everything you want to roll is high now. You never want to roll low below something.
Right.
You know, it makes more sense. It's easier to pick up and you only need one book. You know?
Right, that's good.
I just needed to mention that as far as best game improvement.
So what's your pick of the
My
three?
Pick has to be because I am a role player, not a hack and slash gamer.
LARPer. Sorry.
That's cold. I picked the vampire system for the very reasons that you didn't like it. One, it's very literary and it goes into extreme history, right? Mm-hmm. These books are researched, but what they do is they make up their history. No, it's real history.
They usually do all the. It's like an alternative.
Yeah, the original books are put up by history majors and you know historians. Blah 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 blah.
Nerd history majors.
Well, what they do is they take the existing history and then they take kind of an obscure, unknown character, make that character a vampire, and then come up with a story about how they affected everything around them.
Right. That's cool.
But as far as actual like world goes, I have never seen a role-playing game set tone well.
True.
Everything from all of the material puts out always has a very common theme. It's very concrete. You understand what's going on with it. And it's also the first game series, game company, White Wolf, I've ever known of to have the guts to end their series.
Although I would have to say, for me, it's a lot like Too Much Dark Chocolate. You know, I get very much blood and death and blood and love and blood, and I never see the sun in blood and blood and blood. You know, so I'm like, ugh.
But I also think that's a game master thing.
That's true.
The strange thing about that, and this may be a strength, is you mentioned that they end the series. That's, you know, that means that when you play, you're somehow following a storyline that they're pushing on you.
If the game master chooses to follow that. What I did as a storyteller was I read the books and I picked which characters I kind of thought were interesting and took them from wherever they were and put them into my story.
Yeah.
I took what storylines I thought were interesting, changed them and made them appropriate. But I never used their cityscapes. I never used their prepackaged storylines.
What's great about Vampire is also that whenever you're playing a character of phenomenal cosmic power in any RPG, it becomes immensely hard to play because that character has so much experience more than you as, you know, an 18, 20, 30-year-old person, that it's impossible to play that character. But Vampire creates these sort of built-in things with that they can be saying very simple things, but its effect on you as a character because of how you're rolling can be immense. So it's really neat the way they did that.
And for me, being a role player, I think the unwieldy combat system of Storyteller, and I'll be the first one to admit it is unwieldy.
It
doesn't work for combat. Worked as an incentive to keep people interested in finding diplomatic, political, or other routes to success than combat.
Yeah.
The one thing that I just want to go back to Shadowrun for one quick thing. There's one thing I also remember liking about the system, which was it was very easy to start out learning a skill and to progress a skill to a certain point. But the more you wanted to progress a skill, the harder it got.
Yeah.
So, for example, like if you wanted the way it worked in Shadowrun was when you got experience points, you got like – at the end of an episode, you got like 3 experience points.
Yeah, and you were like, ooh, what can I put those towards?
And those 3 experience points would go towards whatever you wanted to do.
Right.
So, for example, if you had the way the system worked was if you wanted to learn a new skill, it would cost you 1 experience point. If you wanted to advance that to a level 2, it would cost you 2 experience points. Right. If you wanted to advance to level 3.
Vampires like that too.
Yeah, right. It is.
So when you start getting up to the higher things like 8, 9, 10, it gets really hard to get.
You want the god power? That'll cost you 25 experience.
Yeah, exactly. I think now most of them have adjusted to that because before those game systems were broken. That's the problem with the old Dungeons & Dragons.
I think that's still the problem with the new Dungeons & Dragons.
And it's like, suddenly it's like every time you hit a letter, it's like, oh wow.
I don't think the level system works for role-playing games.
No.
It's absurd. That's the huge drawback.
What the amazing thing,
and I don't think character class things work. I hate character classes.
Really?
I hate them.
I like them.
I said, you know what? If I want to play a game, I want to make my character.
But you
like roll and to go, oh damn, you're a hacker. Well, I don't want to be a hacker. I want to be a truck driver.
Well, you're talking character generation, not character development.
Yeah. Well, okay. But character classes shoehorn you in with these levels you start going up the levels and you go, well, yeah, I guess I'm a wizard. I'm not going to fight you on Fireball 18. Well, you know, I want to, you know, raise
the
dead.
We're
going
to have to leave RPGs for another time.
I want to be a wizard that knows how to fight with a sword, too.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So maybe I'm not as good of a wizard, but, you know.
You can do that now with D&D.
Yes.
Well, yeah, you can, but, you know.
Okay.
Much better than you could before.
All right, RPGs for another time.
All right.
We'll have to continue this conversation
definitely.
At some other time.
I agree. All right, bring us some sights. some
I just have one.
Okay.
Since we're podcasting, I wanted to shoot this out. The Sci-Fi Channel has a podcast for Battlestar Galactica.
Cool. Yeah. That's
with
right.
All of
the
its
commentary.
That's
awesome.
And they even tell you exactly when to hit start so that when you're watching the television show, it syncs up. Which makes me wonder if they're just going to shuttle this over to the DVD set and just lay it down.
This is like Pink Floyd's The Wall, like when you got to sync that up with
Wizard of Oz.
Right. Crazy.
Anybody else have any?
Yeah, I got two sites. I got pegwarmer.com, Tantive. We'll put it up on the site. This guy has built scale replicas of Star Wars vehicles.
Ooh.
They're scale to the action figures. So, like, he has Leia's Block Runner, which is the first ship that you see in Star Wars. It's the size of a truck.
It's the size of a bloody truck.
Oh my god.
Because he actually built it to scale to an action figure. So if there are 20,000 of those action figures that have got to fit on that gigantic starship.
Oh my god.
It's hilarious.
And we're waiting for him to do the Death Star still.
The Death Star. We would like to put a request if this gets back to you. We want
Honey,
the Death Star, man.
What's that in our swimming pool?
And the other thing is Chris Barr. Chris Barr is a performance artist out of Philadelphia, who you can tell him to do anything.
Oh,
you
I
can
read tell, about that.
Yeah, you can.
He's got a list of stuff.
You can tell him to do anything. You can basically say,
Chris
hey,
Barr on Thursdays or something.
Yeah, Chris
yeah,
Barr
free on Thursday.
He's free on Thursday. If you want Chris to dress up as a clown and go hit on three blonde women, you got to get him the clown suit and drive him to where you want him to go, and he'll film it happening.
Well, no, he'll do it as long as it doesn't cost him too much money or do anything too illegal. But
right.
one guy,
too dangerous.
One guy said, I want you to pick me up at my place, drive me to go get my laundry done, and then drive me back home. And that's on the schedule for him to do.
Yep. And that's what he does. So
I've got, go
to Chris Barr. It's hilarious.
I've got two quick little ones. Going along with the funny theme from last week, a little cartoon strip most of our viewers probably know, www.dorktower.com. Great comic strip dealing with all sorts of fun geek stuff.
I think Asa even shot that as a...
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's actually something that reminded me about it. Thank you, Asa. Also, for those of you who are board gamers out there, because we have not yet appealed to our board gaming audience.
Maybe we shall go on to that.
Those of you who love Settlers of Catan, as I do, can now play it for free online with all sorts of people.
Really?
We will...
What?
Yes, it is a free Java link up there. You can connect with three other players anywhere else, and it's a full version of the game.
You can chat.
Graphically, it's not very interesting. It's a little flat, but it's free. Who's going to complain?
You mean it looks like a board?
Like I mean,
a
it's
board
it's,
game,
right? But it's not. It's got no graphics
oh,
or
really?
Textures.
Oh.
It's just a big flat green thing for the planes.
It's not like the Magic Gathering video game which came out.
Not so pretty.
Suck.
But that website is settlers.cs.northwestern.edu.
Excellent.
Let's do some shout-outs. We had some fan mail.
Fan mail. Thank you.
Can you believe it already?
We love you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, it wasn't necessarily
so
all
we'd like
fan
to,
mail.
We'd like to give shout-outs to Joe, who said we had great geek information for all of us in the world of geekdom. Thank you, Joe. He's a New York geek. We want to thank Mark, who gave us a great little link to www.emeraldrose.com. Because they make fun of the Enterprise decontamination gel scene where they're all...
How do you spell Emerald Rose? Is it
Emerald Rose is one world. Emerald, E-M-E-R-A-L-D, Rose.
We'll put
Rose as an R-O-S-E.
We'll hook it up on
we'll
the site.
We'll put it up
on our website.
And that was Mark. And Asa. Thank you, Asa.
Asa, you rock.
Yes. Wrote us some really great stuff. Referred us to the sci-fi movie Primer, which we'll have to check out. And also, really, really didn't like our comic book discussion.
not at all.
No.
Well, she just wasn't a fan, so she tuned out during it.
Not so much. But
if she's not a Halo or role player,
we're sorry,
really
Asa.
We're trying.
We're working on it.
But you'll like our geek news.
Yes, you will.
If you guys want to make suggestions about topics and any other suggestions you want to make, email us.
Yeah, and with also, if you find news or web links that we could talk about,
right.
It really helps us out because, you know, this is a hobby of ours. We can't scan the internet entirely.
Yep.
You know, for
show us the cool.
Yeah,
show us
what's cool and we'll spread the word. Which brings me to our website. GeeksOn.com, where you can get the show notes and links to these and our news articles and other things.
Check us out.
Geeks On.
Geeks okay. On.
Do we have anything else?
No, that's it.
All right.
We have to do the reverb thing. Geeks On.
On. On. On. On. On.
Again, I do have special effects we can put there. But.
Oh, okay.
All right. Bye, everybody. Have a good week.
Thanks for coming.
Bye.
Bye.